Welcome to How Now, the podcast where we talk about how to live in the now. And here's your host, Kim Martin Raymond.
Peace and blessings, love and light, and welcome to this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. I am your host, Kim Martin Raymond. I am a minister, spiritual life coach, holistic nutritionist, author, and founder of Redefining You, LLC, where I help my clients to realign themselves, mind, body, and spirit. And welcome to the How Now podcast. If this is your first time listening in on the show, please go to my website, www.hownowpodcast.com. Pick your favorite podcast platform and be sure to like, follow, share, and subscribe. You can also scroll to the bottom of the page and click on the banner for this week's show, and it'll take you to the How Now YouTube channel, where you can like, follow, share, and subscribe there as well. Be sure to click the notification bell so you always know what's happening in the now. And again, that's www.hownowpodcast.com. So let's get into tonight's show, where we are going to be talking about unmasking the hurt. And we're really going to be talking about, you know, the journey towards healing, towards hope, authenticity, and transformation. And that's something that a lot of people have experienced, you know, as a result of this pandemic. It's shined a little bit more of a light during that time. But there are people who have been going through this journey of personal trauma and experiences that they may have had in their past for a better part of their lifetime. And so, you know, it's important that we, you know, establish ways in which we can, you know, begin to, you know, tackle those traumas and acknowledge them and begin to start that process of healing. And so, you know, to talk about that very topic and to talk about unmasking the hurt is my beautiful guest. And of course, as customary with the How Now podcast, before we get into the weeds of things, I'd like to give her an opportunity to introduce herself at this time.
Yay. Thank you, friend. Thank you, Kim, and to your audience. I'm so appreciative of this opportunity to invite me to your stage. It's a privilege to be here. I am Ronnie Cyrus Jackson. I am the author of the book Unmasking the Hurt, A Healing Journey of with Hope, Authenticity, and Transformation. And really, this book is it's a tool. It's a tool for those who may have experienced childhood abuse and trauma like I have. We'll talk about that as we go through the podcast today. And really what I have weaved into the book is my story and my experiences of trauma and how I have healed through those things. And quite frankly, just to keep it real, I still navigate some of those things when triggers come or I have flashbacks. I still am on my healing journey. What I do as the founder of Authentic Transformations is I walk alongside other people on their healing journey. I coach them. I mentor them. I am a friend. And really all that means is I hold space for them. No judgment. I just am interested in them having tools to move through their healing journey. I believe that when we are healed, the whole world heals, one person at a time.
Absolutely. And I am so thrilled that you are here. As we talked briefly before the podcast started, I just really feel as though you are a kindred spirit. There are just, so many things that you talk about and so many tools and so many ways in which we've connected. And I'm looking forward to this wonderful and powerful conversation. So as you mentioned, the title of your book is Unmasking the Hurt, A Journey of Healing with Hope, Authenticity and Transformation. And I love that you've made that title, and you have a beautiful cover on your book that shows a chrysalis, starting out, and then towards the end, they turn into a butterfly. So yeah, she's got the picture up for those who are watching it visually. Yes. And it just shows that transformation. It shows what we go through as individuals. You know, things start out, you know, we may start out in a cocoon, but we eventually are able to break through and are able to soar. We're not able to get to different places. We're no longer stagnant where we are. So I love that is what your book represents and what it embodies. But there are three main questions that you talk about in your book, and they are why me, now what, and but how. And you know, those words are dear to my heart because, like I said, we talked about the show is called How Now. And it's because it is not just about what happened, but it's about how do we move beyond this point? How do we, you know, we don't want to remain stagnant. It's not just a what now. The what now is important because it is acknowledgement. And I think that's a big part of healing. When we can acknowledge that something has happened in our lives, then we can begin to seek out those who can help us to get beyond that point, and those who can inform us of tools that we can use, so that way, even when we've acknowledged it and we've spoken to somebody to help us to move forward, but what can happen when those triggers occur? And so I love that you talk about all of these things and how important they are in being transformative in our lives. So let's scale back a little bit as we take this walk and this journey together and talk about, what experience brought you to this place of writing your book.
Absolutely. So as I am learning my voice in this space right now, I'm just really leaning in and learning how to publicly speak, because I'll tell you, Kim, I really am gifted with the introversion perspective of things. And so I have a teaching spiritual gift, and then I'm also an administrator at heart. So I love to be in the background making everybody else look good. I'm a project manager and finance professionally. And so really the writing journey for me has been interesting because it has allowed me to explore an area of myself that I have not previously explored prior to. I'm in my mid-40s now, and I am not ashamed of my age. And really what brought me to this place was I have two girls. They are young adults, and they now have children of their own. So I am a whole grandma, and I love it. Mm-hmm. And as they have now experienced and transitioned into another space in their life with being mom, they really have been leaning in on me and asking me questions. Yeah. And when they ask questions, I just feel it's my responsibility to have answers or at least be able to guide them and give them resources. A lot of questions they ask deal with mental health. Mama, how'd you do this? Mama, what do I do? Wow, Mom, I don't feel this or feel that. They emote very highly. And so what I realized is with me still having not always or absolutely processed through my own pain from childhood, I needed to get busy doing my work. Because as long as I was staying sick with my secrets, I was not able to be emotionally available to them. And so that was, although I've been on my healing journey for about 20 years now, really the deep, deep work that really began about 10 years ago when my mom passed away. Mm. Yeah. And I tell you, death is very painful, lots of grief, especially with a mother. But one thing I know to be true as well is when something dies, something wakes up.
That's right. That's
and
right.
That is, and really for me, when my mom died, this book woke up with inside of me. It was time for me to write. It was time for me to process through my pain of childhood. And let me even go a step backwards. So what do you mean, Ronnie, pain of childhood? I didn't grow up with my mother and father. You'll read about that in the book should you choose to get it. I grew up in foster care. I was reared into and I was reared out of foster care. So I lived in 7 homes, 3 hospitalization stays, and 2 group home situations. And when, you know, you go through that much transition in childhood, it's like you belong everywhere yet nowhere, and you belong to everybody yet nobody. And so really that shaped a warped identity of myself. And so as I aged out of foster care, I was 17 years old, and I had my daughter when I was 13 years old. And so when I graduated high school, she went to kindergarten, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And so just in that process, again, leaving foster care, now I'm all of a sudden thrust out there on my own. I had no resources. I was too young to get what was called Section 8 housing back then, low-income housing. I was too young for that. I was too young for government assistance. Yet, I didn't have a mommy to pick up a phone and call and say, what do I do with this whole kid, you know? And so really that forced me into sex trafficking is what it's called today. Back in the 90s, they called it child prostitution. We know that children can't prostitute themselves. That just can't happen. And so, you know, so that whole journey really until, you know, I was able to get on my feet. I went to college and I graduated college and all the things. Even that, so that was compounded on top of the abandonment and the abuse that I suffered in every single foster home that I had been in. And then you compound that on top of a diagnosis of, at the time it was Asperger syndrome. We now call it autism spectrum disorder. It was a lot. It was a lot. And so when I was raising my child, you know, as she was a young girl, then I got married in my 20s and all of the things, Kim, really what it took was the grace of God. I became saved when I as a young adult. So when I met Jesus, that's when my life changed. And then it was me really sitting down in a couple of intensive treatment situations, outpatient, through a hospital. So I went every day to a hospital for 6 weeks, just processing through the complex trauma that I had experienced as a child and young adult. And so when I was going through my healing journey, I was picking up tools, and not only picking them up, I was using them, and I continue to use them to this day. The major tool that I learned in counseling was to be honest, honestly admit where I am, and then receive the help when it comes. What I notice about a lot of people who are on their healing journey is they're not honest because they're either believing a narrative that they have made up because their trauma didn't make sense to them. So they make, you know, we manufacture stuff just to make it make sense. And we own stuff that we're not responsible for. And so so to this day, I have an honesty practice that I do with myself every day. Alongside that is when help comes your way, you have to let your ego go and be willing to accept the help, even if it's not packaged the way you think it should be packaged. And so those are just a couple of tools that I continue to use today that really has helped me to move past really all of the negative and toxicity that I had been indoctrinated with as a child, you know, and here we are today, and I'm helping other, mainly women. I'm helping other women learn the same tools that I was afforded.
Wow. I mean, that is so much to digest, you know, and, you know, first I, you know, just give you honor and your flowers for being able to navigate through all of those, you know, for a better lack of a better term, those little, you know, landmines that were consistently coming up in your environment. You know, we think about our childhood and we talk about, you know, being raised in a certain environment, but when your environment is consistently changing, you know, and it's different when you think about a child who may be in whose parents may be in the military and they've traveled into different areas for, you know, into military housing because they had other, you know, children who were experiencing the same thing, but being shifted into so many different homes. And then, like you said, being a teenage mother, you know, and having that experience be different for everyone. I was a teenage mother as well. I was 17 when I had my daughter. So I was a teenage mother as well, but my environment was stable. It was different. So we all know that, you know, as you're going through transformation, you know, for you to be able to, you know, be in a space and say, okay, this is what happened to me. These were the things that I did, you know, and not have your child be a stumbling block, but a stepping stone for you to be able to do the things that you need to do. Like you said, to be able to go and to attend college, it could have been so easy to be consumed by drugs and alcohol and other things that we use to mask or to, you know, avoid what's happening in front of us. And here it is, you know, you had the wherewithal to be able to say, you know, I need to be honest with myself. And again, we know that part of healing and breaking generational curses and things of that nature is being honest. Mm-hmm. And I love that you say that. And that's something that's important. I hope that people have a pen and paper. I have a pen and paper here too, because I'm writing things down as you go. It's about being honest with ourselves and also receiving help as it comes. And we know that sometimes we can, like you said, be prideful. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we create a narrative that we feel is palatable for us to be able to say and for people to hear, you know, and so there's a lot that gets carried in that, you know, and it's a lot of, like you said, being able to look in the mirror and saying, okay, this is my truth. And it's what's happened to me, but it's not where I have to live. It's not where I have to stay. And that's, you know, that's a lot of what I've taken away in just that small amount that you shared so far. And so, you know, it's a difficult space to be in.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that a lot of people are not successful in being able to go through, but, you know, just like you said, it's something that's continuous as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that, you know, it doesn't mean that even when you acknowledge it and you get the help, that the memories and the things do not come back and that they are not things that can trigger them. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, sometimes, you know, you said when your mom passed away,
oh yeah,
it opened up in you, you know, the contents of this book.
Oh,
you
gosh,
know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But how many people take the things that happen in their lives and they take it to their graves with them and don't mm-hmm. share the experiences? You know, I had a different experience. My daughter passed away 14 years ago.
I'm
and
sorry.
She had a brain aneurysm and she passed in her sleep.
Okay. Wow.
But it awakened something in me. And it awakened, you know, the things that I'm doing now, the premise behind this show, the premise behind my business. So there are things that happen and it's how we respond to the things that happen and not react to them. You know, that's what takes us to that next level. That's what takes us to that space where we can begin that process of transformation. So I am loving what you are sharing thus far, because it's so important that, you know, even though we have different things that have happened in our lives, you know, there's a common goal in being able to, like you said, be honest and to be able to share those experiences, because there are others out there who are waiting for us to get to that space. And
you know,
so,
Kim, I'm so sorry I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to say, I think about your story and I think about my story. And when I think about a story, I think about there's a beginning and an end. And what I know to be true is, I don't know that that your story and my story is so much of a story. Rather, it's an experience. And I believe that
Absolutely.
Our experiences, they're not ours alone. Our experiences is everyone who is attached to us along the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because like you said, your daughter was impacted by your experiences. Both of your daughters have been.
Yes.
When my daughter was impacted, my parents were impacted by the experiences that I had. So you're absolutely right. It's not just about us. It's about those who are experiencing it along with us, those who come into our lives as a result of some of the experiences, those who we've met and those who we have spoken to and shared with. You know, just like you said, it's not a story, and it's not something that we're defined by.
No.
And that's what is so critical about all of this. We are not defined by our stories. I never wanted my story to be, oh, that's Kim Martin Raymond. She's the one whose daughter passed away.
Mm-mm.
That's not who I am.
No.
You are Ronnie. You're not your story or what you experienced. You are, yes, it happened to you, but it's, again, how you're responding as a result of it.
Right.
And it's to share and to create safe spaces for others to be able to share. So that way we can cope. Again,
yes.
create our peaceful existence. How do we do that if we don't have that space of acknowledgement, of honesty, of being able to look in the mirror and love what we see, not who we were?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And give ourselves permission to evolve past, experiences that we've had. It's an experience, not a life sentence.
Right.
We have to
Right.
keep moving.
That's right. That's right. It is important. It is important that we, there are just so many things that we go through and we get stuck in that shell. Again, going back to that chrysalis, going back to, being, we get stuck in there and we don't see our way out. You know,
No.
and if we don't know that, if we crack that chrysalis open and what we can become, the beautiful black butterfly, the monarch butterfly
Yes.
that we can become, if we don't get to that point of cracking that shell. It reminds me of a story that a friend of mine shared with me, where she said, an egg does many things, but it has to be broken first.
That's beautiful. Yes,
Before
indeed.
it, yes, before it, before we can use it, okay, we can boil it, and then we can crack that shell, and it's a hard-boiled egg. We can make a deviled egg. We can crack it, and it can be scrambled to make scrambled eggs. All of that. Sometimes we have to get to a point of being broken before we can be used. And
Absolutely.
those of us who are on a spiritual journey as well, knows that that's how we can be used. When we get to the end of ourselves, we can experience God and we can experience who we are and who we can become once that shell is broken. You know,
Yes.
so we have to get to that place of brokenness sometimes before we can get to that place of healing or to that place where we can be used. You
Yes.
know, that song, if you can use anything, Lord, you can use me, anything,
Yes.
anything. But
Yes.
it starts with being broken. And
Yes.
it's going to manifest in people's lives in many different ways, as it's manifested in mine and as it has manifested in yours through this book. So
Yes.
talk to me a little bit about when you started writing this book. When did the book start?
So I will tell you that just before my mother passed away in 2014, I had launched a nonprofit organization in my hometown. Des Moines, Iowa is my hometown. And in that organization, really what I was seeking to do and what I did is I trained professionals, usually those with the Department of Human Services, which was like a child welfare agency in our
Right.
hometown, the police department, and anyone who dealt with survivors of human trafficking. I trained them to identify trafficking and how to respond to survivors when they received them from a situation that they were being rescued from. What I also did, in addition to that, is I went into our alternative high schools in our town. So those are the schools that you get kicked out of traditional high
Right.
school. You have to go to an alternative space.
Right.
I started small groups in those high schools with the girls who were there for one reason or another. A lot of them were teenage moms or, just in situations that they couldn't go to regular high school. What I found is that there wasn't a curriculum for me to work with, though, for that population of girls. So I created a curriculum. I also write curriculum. And in that curriculum, really, this book is the narrative to that curriculum that I created. I didn't realize I was writing a book at that time.
Right.
I just knew these are the major topics or areas of focus that will help these young ladies to navigate through their situations, you know? Yeah. And so, but when I took that as a framework after my mother passed away. Again, she passed away in 2014, probably about 2016. And I started writing. This book did not look like what it looks like today. Mm-hmm. It was a lot larger, longer, lengthier. Really what I know it to be, what it was, is it was just me dumping out and emptying myself of all of the filth and emotion and experiences that I had up until that point in my life. And then it went to an editor and I got my feelings hurt a lot of the time as I was being broken, right? As I was being broken. And then, you know, that's when it shaped and formed and all of the things that it is today. So in 2016 is when I really started putting pen to paper to write. And then, and it's actually been done for over a year now. I was done writing July 2022.
Okay.
And so, and then of course we finally published September 2023, just this year. So awesome. It took a while. And let me tell you why. The writing journey, as you know, is a tricky one, especially when you're sharing your heart. Because for me, what I found a lot of times is my writing would lead me to places that I had not yet processed, didn't even know was a thing. It would bring up stuff that I had suppressed and I didn't know how to move forward. It's like, the emotion would be so intense around it. There would be confusion for me. There would be confusion like, did this really happen or am I making this up? Again, that principle of being honest, where I'd have to stop and say, hey, counselor, I need a session or two. Like, I have to process this because I'm not sure if I'm making this up or if it's real. So a lot of that happened a couple times on my writing journey. And what I had to become okay with as I wrote, I had to be okay with making progress and not finishing something and checking off a box.
right.
So, it took a while.
Yeah, I can imagine, because like you said, what you experienced was a journey that happened over several years. So to think that you could put pen to paper and write it all down in a matter of months or even in a year, it would not even be reasonable. It's like you said, you had to take time to process some of those things, you know, and that even goes back to what you were saying when you said you started working with, you know, the girls in the alternative schools and things like that. And I can't imagine being able to do that, because I'm sure that you saw a lot of yourself in some of those girls that were there. And I'm sure that at sometimes it may have triggered you to be able to see and say, I was where you were. I see what's happening. And to step into that realm of social services after being a part of that system, you would think that you would have an aversion to it. And you didn't run from it, you ran to it and ran through it. Mm-hmm. You know, to be able to be to that space, and it takes a person of a certain caliber and strength, you know, and even those, but it all just goes back to, again, being broken, down so much that you said, okay, I'm not going to run from it. I'm going to run to it so that way I can understand it, so that way I can officially break through it, you know, and it doesn't mean that there's not going to be rubble around me. You know, things that are going to remind me of what was there.
Right.
But at least I know that I can start walking through that rubble, that rubble and get to that space of healing. But that's a powerful, powerful story that you have, an experience that you have, you know, and being able to say, you know, these were some of the things that I saw happening, and I don't want to see it happen to anybody else. And what can I do to be a part of the healing process for those who are coming behind me, and not just slam the door and say that this happened to me and it's over, so I'm finished with it. But to be able to say, okay, there are others who are going to come behind me that may go through this very same thing. And I want them to be able to walk through this door as well. So,
right. You know, Kim, I think about, as I talk about, a few of my tools that I believe, you know, have been helpful for me and will be helpful for others along their journey. You can attest to this as well. I talk a lot about community. And when I talk about community, for me, community was everything because I hadn't had a real good picture of what does success look like coming from where I come from the hood, like from the gutter. I'll tell you, my foster parents, they needed a paycheck. They weren't so concerned about the children in their home. It was a means to an end. And so, you know, when you look at that and looking back now, I think of generational dysfunction and how dysfunctional sometimes we as a culture, and I'm speaking from a Black woman's perspective, sometimes, not always, sometimes as a culture, we accept things as normal that's really generationally dysfunctional. And just because it was like that for them and me doesn't mean it has to be like that for them and they. That is those who are coming behind us. And so as I think about writing my book, and I've said this before, is when I heal, I realize that the world heals one person at a time, because anything and anybody attached to me will experience a healed version of me. And so now I get to be a representation of what a confident Black woman looks like, feels like, sounds right, even though we've been through some stuff, you know. And that's why, you know, that's why, so representation matters. And I think that, you know, generations before us, they just really didn't have the tools, maybe the resources, maybe even the language or the capacity to deal with some of the hurts, hangups, and habits that they've had to navigate. And so they shut down. Right. I don't want to be her. I want to be who I needed when I was going through my healing journey for someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you say something very poignant, because, you know, when you talk about, you know, not having a point of reference, you know, not being able to, you know, like you said, I didn't know what success looked like, you know, and that's something, you know, because what do people do when they don't have something to refer to? Not many people think to say, okay, but can I establish what success is going to look like for me and what that's going to mean for me? Because I think we, you know, society and social media and all of these other, you know, ways in which information enters our ear gates and our eye gates gives us the impression of what success or what, you know, body image or anything else. What are these things? How are these things supposed to look like for us? What are these things supposed to look like for us? You know, and that's what is to be accepted, you know, not what we make it,
yes,
you know? And for some people, success may just be getting out of the bed in the morning.
Yes, Lord. Yes.
For some people, you know, just the fact that they were able to put their feet on the floor and walk, you know, that they woke up in their right mind. They woke up, you know, being able to know where they were, woke up and they weren't looking at the stars. They were looking at actual roof because they were in a home. What does success look like for someone is so individualized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always make the analogy of the fact that we are all our own personal mosaic.
Yeah.
We are shards of glass that have been broken, that if you just took those pieces and touch them, you may hit yourself, you may hurt yourself. But when you have that community that you were talking about, when you start to surround those shards of glass and those pieces, and they become reflective, they become a beautiful mosaic, and nobody's looks like anybody else's, but they're all beautiful and they all have a purpose. And someone looks at it and sees the beauty in it and says, wow, I like that.
Yes.
And but it's so specific to who you are,
mm-hmm.
and nobody's is the same. So to me, nobody's success is going to look the same. And so, you know, we do have to get away from, you know, saying that just because I've never personally seen what it looks like, what does it feel like? How does it make me feel when I get to a certain space? How do I feel when you know, certain things happen to me? You know, I'm sure when you were able to turn the key to the first place that you were able to take your daughter, it was probably an experience like no other.
Yes,
you know,
because it was
but
mine and it was clean.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. And like you said, there are so many gaps in society. You know, I think about the education system. I think about, you know, sometimes, like you said, services. What happens to those who fall in the gaps when services are not available to them? You know,
right.
who's filling in those gaps? There are a couple of dotted lines in there that we fall into the cracks with. The same thing happened, you know, as an educator. The same thing we see happening in our education system. We may have our children that are receiving services, and then when they reach a certain age, then all of a sudden they stop. And then what do we do for those people? Do we
Yes.
just leave them at the on the wayside? You know, where do they go? Like you said, where'd you go?
Yes.
When you had no one to go to, where do you go? Then that's when we start looking at the things that are, you know, become the band-aids, though, that become the means to an end.
Absolutely.
And then we face judgment.
Yes.
But
Oh.
what other choices did we have?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then as a culture, you know, when we see said persons, younger and younger, unfortunately, we're seeing homelessness in younger populations, and it hurts my heart. And so when we see that as a community, how do we rally around that? I'm not saying that we have to move people into our homes. I'm not saying be radical, but I know there's a solution. It just takes a couple of people doing one thing consistently. Maybe you give clothes, maybe you give $20 a month, maybe you give extra food from your pantry. You see what I'm saying? Like, I
Right.
believe as a community together, we have everything anyone in need needs.
Right.
I just think that.
That's
So
it.
I know that, you know, when we talk about going back to the butterfly analogy that I love just of so much and has been such a reflection of my life, the metamorphosis of a butterfly. You know, Kim, when the butterfly is a caterpillar, it crawls on the ground, right? So the environment is the ground. But when that metamorphosis begins to happen, it has to move out of that grounded environment higher up on a branch. And when it moves out of that environment, it becomes something different. And then we continue to transform and crystallize and do the thing. And then when it comes out of that cocoon, it moves yet higher to another environment. It flies. And I think about environment being such a huge component to a person's healing as it was mine. And sometimes I believe people don't realize the fullness of their healing, though they're trying and trying and trying and trying and doing their absolute best. It's the environment that suffocates the healing efforts.
Yeah.
I understand that everyone can't move or relocate or, you know, leave a home or leave a situation. I understand that. But what I do know for sure is we get to make choices who we're connected to, i.e., old playgrounds, old friends, toxic relationships. We get to choose some things in our environment. And that is another thing that I teach on when we're healing is remix. You got to remix your environment. It's time to let some things go so that you can move higher, level up into better.
I love that. I love that. I'm writing those things down because just like you said, it's about that healing process. And so I want to begin to, you know, talk to that instance, to talk about, you know, how we begin to move into that space, like you said, that journey of hope, authenticity, and transformation. And you've already spoken about, you know, first being honest with ourselves, you know, putting that mirror up to ourselves and not looking beyond the mirror. And I know that all too well, too. How many of us look in the mirror and don't really see ourselves? We're looking at the background of what's in the mirror, but we're not looking into our own eyes and seeing ourselves. And so getting to that space where we're being honest and turning that mirror on ourselves and saying, okay, I see myself and this is what I see. and being honest in that. And then, like you said, receiving help as it comes in whatever form it comes in, because just like you said, it may not look like what we think it should look like, but it's some instance of help. And some of that comes with putting our pride aside,
Yes.
you know, because at the end, pride is a huge thing. That what does the Bible say? It leads to destruction.
Right.
It leads to destruction because we won't allow those who are bringing things to our realization. Sometimes we don't know that there are resources out there until we're exposed to them. And there are things just like this, like platforms like these. When we go out and do speaking engagements, when we speak on podcasts, when we are, you know, out and, you know, speaking amongst family and friends and being honest and open, you know, there's so much vulnerability in that. And so sometimes that, you know, we become fearful, you know, but when we're open and we're open to share, then it opens the doors for others to begin to receive that help that they need. Just like you said. And then I love that you said that remix your environment, remix
yes.
it, start looking at some of those toxic relationships. Think about it as a recalculation, just like we talk about our GPS. When it starts recalculating, it's telling us that we're going down the same road. We've been here before, but where we are is not where we need to be. We need to be over there and start listening to it, telling us, okay, I need for you to make a redirection here. Turn around and go the other way and let's see what's out there, you know, and as new things are opening, be open to and willing to receive those things as well. So those are some wonderful places to start when we're talking about getting to that place of hope and authenticity and transformation. Okay. And so what are some other things? I think about your clientele, those who are coming to you, those who you work with, and what are some other tools that they can begin to put in their toolbox for that?
Absolutely. One thing that I'll talk about a couple of things, but another area that that I delve into that I had to do my own work is forgiveness. And forgiveness of myself and forgiveness of said other folks. And really what I had to learn when I was doing my forgiveness work, I had to learn, again, that honesty piece it strings throughout everything you do. That's the authenticity piece. But what I learned in my forgiveness phase of counseling and therapy is that I am not responsible for some things, just like you, just like other people. Unfortunately, people are people and we hurt people. We hurt people. And it is our responsibility as adults, it's our responsibility to get clear what was my role in the situation and how do I need to move forward with the situation. When I think about forgiving myself, one thing that really stopped me was shame and guilt and regret. And I had to do a whole lot of work in that area. And when I was doing my shame work, one thing that continued to come up for me was I wasn't clear. I wasn't being clear on said situation, experience, whatever the thing was that I continued to hold on to. And for some reason, I had this wrong thinking is what it is. I had to correct a wrong ideology that I had began to believe about myself before I could even move forward. And my wrong ideology was I was bad, because that's how I learned in foster care. If you're bad, then you reap what you sow.
Right.
And sometimes we reap things and we didn't sow anything. It just happened. It just happened. And so not always attaching a behavior or a situation to something you've done. I had to really do a lot of work in that area. So forgiving ourselves, forgiving others, the distinct thing that I write about in my book that was so, so helpful for me, and I wish that we would teach about it at the church, in my experience. In church, I wish we would teach about it from the pulpit. Forgiveness does not mean reconciliation. Those are two separately different things, totally different things. But sometimes I believe, as was true for me, when we talk about forgiveness, we lump it all together. So if I forgive and I got to deal with that person again, oh, I'm good. No thanks, not interested.
Right.
And that's not
true. Right.
So yeah, we gotta really work with teaching people what forgiveness, what that really looks like. Right. It's not being attached to the outcome of what happened to the person next.
Right.
We gotta detach ourselves from the outcome of what happens to them, of what revenge looks like on them. As long as we are attached to the outcome, making sure they get theirs, we'll never be able to forgive because we're attached to them still.
Right. And we give that power. And we don't want to give that power. Mm-hmm. And that's what we tend to do. I love that. You said the one thing that stuck out, like I said, I had to write it down. Like you said, don't attach what happened to what you did. It's not, they don't go hand in hand.
No.
And like you said, having the person, express what forgiveness means to them, that will at least give you an idea of where they're coming from.
Yes.
Sometimes we have to ask the question, what does forgiveness look like to you? What does it mean to you? Because for some, like you said, that means that that person, I'm saying it's okay what they did, or I'm thinking, it's all right. I'm giving them permission to keep doing what they're doing because I've forgiven them. Some people think that way.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. What does forgiveness look like to you? And when you're sharing that with a trusted person, a therapist or coach or someone that you're speaking to, so that way they have an idea of where your thoughts are. Because a lot of things in healing and talking about forgiveness is a change in mindset.
Yes.
But we have to know where your mind is. And we can't make the assumption that everybody's thought on what forgiveness looks like is the same.
Yes.
And sometimes you have to say, oh, okay, that's I understand where you're coming from, and being able to meet people where they are.
And can I insert here, when we are doing forgiveness work with our clients, one thing I think is very critical, at least it was for me, and I believe for our clients, be willing to give an example of a situation or a time when you work through forgiveness, because some people, they don't even have a concept of it. And I'm seeing that I wasn't the only one in that. I didn't know, I'd never seen forgiveness. I mean, we don't learn this in school. So having someone say, this is what forgiveness looks like for me, that is extremely, incredibly helpful. Otherwise, sometimes when you're telling a person what to do, such as forgiveness, it can come off as shaming.
Right.
You just need to forgive. Just need to. You can't minimize people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes with empathy. We know we can't disregard how someone feels or what they've experienced. And we hear that all the time. You're being extra. You're doing the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the most for me. It's not extra for me because this is my experience. This is my truth.
And it's all I know.
That's all I know. That is all I know. So it's huge. It is huge. Like you said, to be able to say, okay, give an example, so that way I know where you're at. I know where you're coming from. And we all just think that we clump everybody together and say, okay, you know what I mean when I say forgive? Do I? And what if I don't? Don't make me feel ashamed to ask. Well, no, I don't know what that means.
In fact, we should say, can I show you what an example looks like for me, like how I did it?
Right.
Because they're not going, what I find is most times they're not going to admit. They're not going to admit that they don't know what you're talking about, because it's an implied thing in this culture that we should just know.
Right.
We should just know.
Right. And then we should be ashamed or embarrassed if we don't.
Yes.
That's how we learn. That's how we learn. That is how we learn. And like you said, we're ashamed or we're afraid to ask, we're made to feel that, like you said, if we don't know, what do you mean you don't know what forgiveness is? What's the matter with you?
Mm-hmm.
It's not what's the matter with me. It's what I've experienced. I've not experienced that.
That's
That
right.
may not be something that is something that is not familiar to me.
Right.
So does that
Yeah.
make me a bad person because I'm not familiar with it?
No, absolutely not.
But if I'm
Absolutely.
asking the question, that makes me a person who's curious, just as a
Yeah.
child is curious and wants
Yes.
to know. But we have to
Yes.
start, like you said, start creating platforms and speaking to people in terms of, these are new ways of thinking, or these are new experiences. Don't be afraid to ask questions,
Yes.
or like you
Yes.
said, give examples so that people are clear on things. Yes, there is more than one way to do things, but at least if we have examples, that's how we connect.
That's
That's how we connect,
right.
by sharing those experiences. Oh,
Yes.
I've experienced something similar to that. Okay, now that's what connects me to a person. That's what connects us. That's what makes us kindred spirits. That's what makes us, have these wonderful conversations and develop friendships, because they are commonalities. There may be some variables, yes,
Right.
but there's something that connects us in some
Right.
way. And we're always
Right.
grappling and looking for what it is that connects us. But then we can also begin to discuss, okay, my situation wasn't exactly like this, and this is how I did it. So that way we begin to have that conversation. And that's what needs to happen, that communication, that conversation that says, okay, yeah, there are a few differences, there are a few variables, but I understand. I
But
can, I don't feel like I feel that I'm being heard.
absolutely,
So.
absolutely. And the other thing, Kim, that really I use in my toolkit when I'm with myself even is the five stages of grief. Because a lot
Yes.
of times when people come to us, they're grieving. It just looks different, but it's grief. It's some stage of grief. And when we give that language to our clients, and when that language was given to me, it's like the whole world opened up. Like, this makes sense. Yes, I can identify that I'm angry. I can identify that I'm in denial. I can identify that I'm bargaining. Like, I can begin, it gives us power and control over our situations to really begin to process through them. And the tricky thing about grief for me, as it's taught, sometimes it's not taught that you can grieve things that you never had. For me, I grieved my mom and my dad, though I never even known them. I didn't know them like in a way that other people know, but I grieved them. And sometimes grief is taught from a limited perspective, and that's only when someone dies. So when the concept was brought to me, like, Ronnie, do you think you're grieving? No, why would I be grieving? Really? That was just me not knowing. I was full blown grieving, yearning, wishing, bargaining, all of the things that go with grief. And I was just in a perpetual loop of that, unable to move forward because I didn't have help to give me tools and language to move through it. So I do a lot of grief work.
And that's something, like you said, that's huge. And it is something that is misunderstood. And it's like you said, people think about it as just something that happens when someone passes away. And there are so many other things that we can grieve, And so it's being able to say, okay, the situation has happened. I need to experience the emotions that come along with it. And that brings me back to, homeostasis. When we are hot, we sweat, because our body needs to do that. And when we begin to stifle things, like when we tell our young black boys or our children, stop that crying, man up, don't do that. We're stifling what our body naturally needs to experience, so that we can begin to heal. We can't do that if we're stifling the things that naturally need to occur in our bodies. We need to have that experience of anger and be able to express it in a way that we're not harming ourselves or others. Yes, but we need to experience it. And how do we do that in a way that's safe? If we're in pain and we need to cry, we need to cry. We don't live there, but we need to go ahead and release that so that we can begin the healing process.
Yes.
When we bleed, it eventually stops.
Why?
We don't just bleed out, you know? And, you know, unless it's gotten to a point where it's beyond our control, but there are things that happen within our body, within our system that work. Our bodies are a beast, and there are things that we are experiencing and things that help us to heal and that help us to get to that regenerate, that help us to get to a space of healing or being able to operate optimally. So that's something that, you know, is important for us to remember, not to stifle the emotions that we're having, but to be able to express them in a positive manner so that, that way we can get back into, you know, that space of growth. Yes. It's about growth, you know?
Yes.
So.
Yes, that really and truly is what it is about, Kim. Growth. That's it. Growth. Yeah. And growth is normal. And we must normalize these conversations.
Yes.
We must normalize these conversations so that those who are coming up, you know, behind us, so that they understand just the natural progression of evolution, of evolving as a human, of maturing. You know, we have fancy terms now like emotional intelligence or relational intelligence. It's all the same. We're talking about growth and learning and moving forward. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like I said, this has been such a beautiful conversation. I know I'm being cognizant of our time together, but are there any additional things that you wanted to add to the toolbox before we begin to wrap things up here?
Yeah, you know, the quickest and most effective way for what I call just a quick tune-up, I call it a tune-up, understanding, getting clear with yourself and not questioning or fighting yourself about what brings your heart joy. When you see it, when you hear it, when you speak about it, when you smell it, when you experience the thing with your senses, what is that thing that brings your heart joy? And really, I put that in the toolbox because sometimes we are in situations where, you know what, I can't take a vacation or run away or whatever. I just need, for me, I'm gonna give you an example. For me, what that is a hot bath.
Yeah.
A hot bath and just quietness. That's one thing that gives my heart joy. It will just really help me to refocus really quickly. Another thing for me is bath and body lotions.
Yes. Yes.
I love good smells. Like my home is, it just makes my heart full of joy. I can't control what's going on, but I can control what I plug into the wall.
I love that. I love that. You know, because just like you said, it touches the senses. I think about, you talk about being in a bath, that you're surrounding yourself with water. You can hear it. You can feel it and sense how it feels on your body. Is the water cold? Is it hot? Is it just right? Does it feel room temperature? Does it feel like you're not in water at all? You know, and like you said, with those smells, do the smells remind me of something? Is it, you know, how do I feel? Like you said, do I feel tingly inside? What is it doing? Does it make me hungry? What are the smells doing for me? You know, but it's all those beautiful things that touch the senses. And what's important about that is being present.
Yes!
It lets me know that I'm here. I'm here. I'm in this water. I'm here. I smell that. That brings things back to me. It lets me know that I'm here.
Yes.
And I'm experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. It is a grounding. Mm-hmm. It is a grounding.
And it also lets you know that I am in control in this moment.
Yes.
I am controlling it this right now. And
yes.
That is so huge because sometimes we lose a sense of control, especially if we have things going on so quickly in the background and, you know, moving so fast. And, you know, we just have to stop and be present.
Yes.
You're okay. You're okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just let people know I'm here, because when you're here, like you said, when you bring yourself to center, it's like, I'm here. Okay. And now I can start looking at how I need to navigate now that I'm here. I'm back. I love
Yes.
that.
Yeah.
I
So
absolutely
there's a
love
lot
that.
more things that I do, you know, when I, you know, coach with other people, and I'm sure there's techniques that we probably use that's the same. And what makes me happy with that is because they work. That's why people do some things that are similar or the same. We might have our own spin on it. It's because they worked for us and we're just sharing the goodness with someone else. Like, and if it doesn't, try this. And if it doesn't, try this. You know, there's so many modalities that we can use, especially when it comes to healing, for the immediate, to get us out of
Yes.
the crisis, right? And then into the present, so that now we can logically and reasonably think about how to move forward in a safe and healthy manner versus a destructive manner.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And with that, honey, please tell people how they can get in contact with you, because like I said, we can talk for a whole nother hour and go on and on, but that's the beauty of this show. I always tell people they're always welcome to come back to share, because what's happening now is not always what's happening 2 weeks, 2 minutes, 2 months, 2 years, 2 hours from now. So you're always welcome to come back, but I want to give our guests an opportunity, or our listeners an opportunity, so how they can get in contact with you, and to also grab a copy of your awesome book. So if you would tell them how they can get in contact with you.
Absolutely. So, you know, my social media platforms, I am on Facebook. And again, my name is Ronnie Cyrus Jackson. You can find me on Facebook, although Facebook is not my primary. I try to check it every day, but if you do send me a DM or a message in Facebook, I will respond. I am primarily on LinkedIn, though. Again, on LinkedIn, I'm Ronnie Cyrus Jackson. And there's a feature in there, if you're not familiar with LinkedIn, where you can also DM me. Then you can go to my website. My website is ronniecyrus-jackson.org, O-R-G. And on my website, there's a place that says contact me, I think, and you can put your message in there. And I will
Awesome.
tell you, I don't have a team. It's me. And guess what? When you reach out to me, I will reach back.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So, like you said, her social media platforms are Ronnie Cyrus Jackson. Is that with the hyphen in between Cyrus Jackson on the social media as well?
Yes.
Okay. And then her website is www.ronniecyrus-jackson.org. And I believe that you can get a copy of, or it will give you a link to a copy of your book as well, correct?
Yes,
Awesome. 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 So people have a wonderful way. And of course, that will be in the description when the show airs, so you'll be able to get in contact with Ronnie. Ronnie, again, thank you so much for being here with me and for talking about how we can unmask the hurt, and for providing us with such powerful tools that we can use to be able to get from that point of being a chrysalis and being a part of the environment and being on the ground, to being able to take off and to soar to the heights that we were destined to achieve in our lives, and to be able to break free, you know. So I absolutely love that. And for those of you who are avid book readers, I definitely encourage you to get a copy of her book. It is wonderful. And you know, be sure to leave a comment and to share love and to reach out to her. Like she said, she's willing to connect with you at you know, whenever you reach out to her, make sure that you DM her, follow her, you know, and be a part of this wonderful environment that we're creating to, again, to cope, to create our peaceful existence. Now, Kwani, I'm gonna ask you know, what I ask all of my guests at the end of the show, which is, you know, how are you living in this now? What are you doing to cope and to navigate in this space that you're in?
Yeah, so I'll be very vulnerable. And right now, what I am doing is I am really leaning into the opportunities that's coming my way as far as being a newly published author. I'm getting many opportunities to come and speak to small groups and different cities. So I'm doing some traveling and I'm leaning into that. And one thing that I want your audience to know is this: just because you haven't done it before doesn't mean you're not. So let's reframe our language. Let me give you an example. I used to say, I'm not a speaker. Oh, I don't do that. Well, just because I have never done it doesn't mean I'm not that. I am leaning into learning and growing in my speaking skills. So I'm doing some Toastmasters now, learning to speak. And then for myself, that's what professionally, that's what I'm doing. But then for me personally, what I'm doing is I'm making sure I'm scheduling time for myself. As a person who navigates autism, I have to resettle myself and have quiet space throughout my week. And so I'm being very intentional to schedule me on my calendar. So that's what I'm doing these days. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And like I said, you shared something. Just because you are not doing something, you know, let's reframe our language. Just like you said, it's not what you can't do. Yeah. And, you know, oh, well, you know, instead of saying I'm not speaking, I'm not, I haven't spoken yet.
Yes.
Yet.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, or that that is out of the realm of possibility. Right. I haven't experienced that yet. Doesn't mean that I can't. You don't know what you can't do if you haven't tried it. So I love that. That's a beautiful message that you leave them. Is there anything else that you want to leave with our listening audience before we go?
I just want everybody to just breathe in and exhale out. And just know that I am sending you so much love and so much light and positive, positive energy for your healing journey. It is hard. It is a rough road. I don't want to say it's not, but guess what? It's worth it. And so are you. You're worth it. So if you need support, we're here. We're out here. Just reach out. We can't help if we don't know. Just reach out. You are loved. And we thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Awesome. Awesome. Hi, well, look, that's it. There's nothing more to be said. Again, thank you so much for being here. My kindred spirit, my new sister, it has been so wonderful having you here. And again, like I said, you are now part of the How Now family, and you are welcome back at any time. Anytime you're willing to come back, we are more than welcome to have you. So thanks again for being here and for sharing this space and this time with me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yes. And that will do it for this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. And until we see you the next time, I say peace.